Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chasetown Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers, one win shy of a winning streak. Currently on a winning happening with after a dominant win over the Dallas Mavericks. As predicted by the geniuses on this here show, we told you that the Cavs were the better team. And you know what? Net rating didn't lie. Support for the Chasetown Podcast and this message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now via Zoom is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, I am doing just great. The season is remains bananas.
I think that's a fair way to put it.
The development of the team, bananas.
Mm-hmm.
The play of the young core, bananas. Everything's working right. Everything's coming up, Cavs. And it's just hard not to be giddy about this team. You have always been the more optimistic of the two of us. Even some of our reviews have noted that I have often played the grump. Mm-hmm. Of the two of us.
It's a necessary part for the dynamic, you know, like,
yep.
I think when you ask questions, it makes me think out my optimism of why do I feel this way? Figure out if I should be as confident as I am. I think it's a good dynamic. So give yourself a little credit there.
I do too. But with that said, you know, you were much higher on the Cavs than mm-hmm. consensus. I think over under was 26.5.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I'm high on them. I think 30 wins.
Yeah.
And that would make me an optimist, but I thought I was being relatively, you know, center line there, maybe a little hope. And it just feels like they're blown past even your optimistic expectations.
That's right. I predicted 36 wins in our Discord, which we got a little bit of a poll going, which, you know, the funny thing is, I think we try really hard to go optimist versus just flat out homerism, where it's okay, we're not really thinking this through. We just think that this team's going to be good, right? Like we try to figure out, okay, why do we feel the way we feel and what's the process going to look like? Because then if we're at least outlining the process, we can figure out where we went wrong, what we got right, and what seems to be happening right now with the Cleveland Cavaliers as we're now a quarter of the way through the season is they're just further along kind of the process that we outlined. I mean, I think there's a few surprises and outliers that we didn't expect. I think one of the big ones is probably Jetty Osman, and we will get into our biggest surprises from the season just a little later in this podcast because, you know, it's been a quarter of the season. I think this is a good time to kind of take stock of some of our biggest surprises, but really what it comes down to is the belief that we had in this young core, in the eventual fit, the way that these pieces can work together, it's just further down the road than we expected. Like this, some of the stuff we're seeing, I might have expected, you know, second half of the season, next season, over the next few years. And we're already seeing some of those encouraging signs through 21 games.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I can't stop saying it. It's bananas. Mm-hmm. What is going on? How are they doing this?
You know, it's pretty great. I mean, the win over Dallas, I think, is a significant one. I would caution people. So part of the reason why we felt confident on the last podcast about this was we felt Dallas wasn't as good as their record. Yes, they are fourth in the Western Conference, but they're 10th in the West when it comes to net rating. This is a team that has been very uneven overall. But for the Cavs to go into Dallas on the road, starting off a road trip, you know, you're still working Evan Mobley back in the lineup. Luka Doncic, who was shooting like 30% from three coming into this game, going 7 of 11 from three, which I know some people pointed out, well, he went 0 for 4 from the free throw line. Okay, take three of his threes and put them into the free throw line. Does that make it any better for Dallas if he's shooting his normal 31%? No. That was bonkers that you can have Luka Doncic have one of those kind of Draymond Green Game 7 type shooting performances, and the Cavs still comfortably take care of business and really were in control for the majority of that game once the first half or first quarter was over, really.
Yeah, it felt like they were kind of even with one another through the first, and then the Cavs just kind of were kind of comfortably in control. And then the third quarter, I mean, they just blew the lid off. It was insane. They were Showtime Lakers-ing it up and down the court. I mean, I will say this, not to pour any water on the enthusiasm around this team right now. The Mavs looked pretty bad. I mean, they did. there were some plays. Crandall Dinsdale, Cavs film room, was tweeting out some stuff, and he's like, they've gotten the Mavericks in hell. And it's like, well, some of them is like, just help off Evan Mobley to stop a wide open lob to Jared Allen. So they looked every bit as discombobulated as we thought they might. Yep. On the last podcast, I said it's a good vibes team versus a bad vibes team.
Mm-hmm.
Very much felt that way.
Yeah.
But just like, you would think that might equate to like a 6-point win, not a 15-point win. That's really a 30-point win.
Right. And also to keep in mind how bad this team was both on the road last season, in the third quarter last season, like they would be competitive against some of these teams. And then a player like Luka Doncic would come out and hit some threes and you'd see them get rattled. There was a stretch in the third quarter where I thought Darius Garland was careless with the basketball. He wasn't keeping his head up. He stepped on the sideline after a trap came because he didn't recognize it coming soon enough and got himself into a bad situation. Like, I can live with a lot of the Darius turnovers, like when he's trying to force a pass in the traffic and sometimes it's mishandled, sometimes it's a little bit behind him. When you're making those flashy passes in traffic, hitting a moving target, if it's a little bit behind, there's a likelihood that can be mishandled. What I can't live with, obviously I can live with it, but what I'd like to see him cut down on is those kind of mental errors, right, where it's not focus, it's either a lazy pass or just kind of mishandling the ball, not paying attention to where he's stepping on the court. That's the type of stuff I'd like to see him cut down. But overall, as you mentioned, the Cavs came out in the third quarter, they gave Dallas the business. They've been a really good third quarter team all season. If you had to guess, Carter, when it comes to net rating, where do you think the Cavs rank in third quarter net rating?
Like, not their number, where they rank league-wide?
Yeah.
I'd say, just because they have been really good, like, eighth?
Third.
Wow, really?
They have a plus 12.3 net rating behind only the Golden State Warriors and the Boston Celtics, which I think the Celtics might have inflated that a little bit against the Cavs in that game where they had nobody. But you know what? Like, the Cavs have been really, really good. And typically that third quarter is kind of the adjustment period, right? You come out of halftime, both coaches go over things with the team. They talk about what they're seeing and you make those adjustments. And for the Cavs to come out and make one of their worst quarters last season one of their better ones, I think that's a really encouraging sign.
Well, it's a quarter that most bad teams or young teams are bad at, you know?
That's true.
It's the quarter where you come out a little flat-footed and the other team jumps down your throat. And, even the LeBron Cavs teams, I would remember, would kind of come out flat a lot of the times. Like, okay, we got to ramp ourselves back up into form. Mm-hmm. And that has not been the case for this Cavs team. They have come out sharp. They have come out really looking to execute their stuff. Part of me wonders if that is a spot where, and now I'm really editorializing, I'm sure like some people who are a little tethered to the earth are probably rolling their eyes right now, and probably mm-hmm. fairly so. But like, you know, I wonder if that's part of where like they are a young team. So having Ricky, Kevin, and the vets in there able to kind of just ground things at half.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that means something, you know, if they can, you know, like, cause they come out so much more focused, like, cause this team still is prone to those 2-3 minute stretches where it's just like four turnovers in a row or some defensive lapses. And like, you just don't see that as much, out of those breaks.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. I think Kylie disagrees as she slams the door on you in the background.
Well, the stupid dog just blasted through the door. So she was doing me a favor.
I think she was disagreeing with your takes. She's like, give credit all to the young core. But I honestly, I think that's a really good point. And especially on a night where Jetty Osmond was out, like having Kevin Love, having Ricky Rubio, Jetty would be the other one I point to as guys that have actually been in the league for a while. They're on the other side of 25. I think that's a really nice steadying presence to have. And I think as this team has got healthier, you see, okay, you're going to have stretches where the young players are inconsistent. That is part of being young and learning how to win in the NBA. But having more guys to go to, more veterans that can kind of maybe get you that one easy bucket, that full court pass from Kevin Love to Darius Garland that just kind of excites everybody. Like,
I feel like that almost got undersold. That was a three-quarters court alley-oop. I know he didn't dunk it, so maybe that's you're just never going to get it when they dunk it. That was insane.
I don't think Kev has thrown one of those like that since LeBron's been here.
Was it Jetty? I don't remember who it was. He had one a couple games ago, I think, while you were on vacay.
You might be right, and I'm sure there's been others. Jetty seems to get out in transition every now and then, but I'm talking about where it travels basically the length of the court just in the air. He was really good against Dallas. I tweeted out, incorrectly, mind you, that Porzingis was the fourth best big in that game. He was the fifth. He was not better than Kevin Love last night, even though he was getting calls like he was the best.
The feed Porzingis movement is not bearing dividends, man. It was pretty ugly, man.
He was taking
some really audacious stuff that looked not good.
And honestly, Porzingis is a bit of a reminder of just how fortunate we are with Evan Mobley. You talk about these unicorn type guys.
Can I stop you real quick? Because we have highlights going on the YouTube right now, and that little dream shake, that up and under step through. That Jarrett put on Moses Brown.
Ooh.
Sheesh.
Moses Brown thought he was Moses Moody by the end of that. He was confused who he was, where he was. Man, that Jared Allen, like, that's another thing that I'm going to get to a little later. But the way that he is able to punish, let's call them the 70% bigs. You know, when teams are like, you know what, we're making these value signings, they're going to set some screens. We don't need to really invest in that position. He is eating those type of centers alive this season, right? Like the 70% bigs, the 70% of Jared Allen, the JaVale McGee's that these teams will run out. He just goes out there and his footwork is so improved. He's able to recognize pressure when it comes and make the pass out of those situations.
Feel like he's added some functional strength too.
He's definitely stronger. I think we'll continue to see that. I'd like to see that because I still think there are times where he gets bullied a little bit fighting for rebounds. But I mean, career best numbers across the board for him.
I know you noticed his really powerful defensive board that led to that Markkanen three where he just snatched it. You know, it was funny because in preseason, they were talking about all this functional strength he'd added. And I was like, oh, okay, he definitely looks bigger. But then he was kind of getting bullied a little bit early on the boards. And, you know, man, he has just been insane in his last 10 games. 18 points, 11 boards, 71% from the field.
We're also still at very small sample size when it comes to the starting lineup of Garland, Okoro, Markkanen, Mobley and Allen, but they do have a plus 14.1 net rating with a 115.6 offensive rating, which I think the biggest concerns for that lineup were going to be on the offensive end. And it's encouraging to see, you know, you mix in someone like a Lauri Markkanen that is not afraid to shoot, another 20-point performance for him. I think his highest scoring total as a Cleveland Cavalier. You add someone like that that's just willing to take those shots, right? Which I think is one of the biggest things, is he'll take a somewhat contested shot, which someone needs to do. It just opens up absolutely everything for that lineup.
Yeah, and we saw it happen even last year with Jetty. It just didn't work. Shots weren't going in, you know, but like Jetty even was adding that kind of flexibility to the offense and has this season. So you got him who was hitting and then Lauri wasn't hitting. If both those guys are hot at the same time, yeah. I mean, not to repeat the title of the episode of the podcast, but we got a stew going.
We got a stew going, Carter. What really excites me too, and I tweeted this out last night, but when you've got a defensive trio, which usually it takes time and experience in the league, but when you have 20-year-old Evan Mobley, 20-year-old Isaac Okoro, and 23-year-old Jared Allen, and in 96 minutes together, that trio has a defensive rating of 84.7. That's absurd.
It's not an enormous sample, but here's the thing. It's not a really small sample at this point.
It's not a really small sample. Like, we're getting to almost 100 minutes. And the thing is, like, that number is going to come up, because if it doesn't, we're going to have to start, like, planning parade routes if our starting lineup, a trio in our starting lineup, is holding teams to, like, 85 points per 100 possessions. But the exciting thing is, like, with those guys being so young, it's reasonable to conclude that they're going to get better from here.
Well, and here's the other thing.
Voice just completely blows a tire.
Listen, I was trying to get there just to jump in and protect you, but it's okay that you called it out.
Let's dwell on it.
The other thing that really matters when you're looking at lineup data, you know, I remember maybe it was the last pod. I don't remember if it was the last one or the one before. Someone asked about Okoro's defensive numbers, because obviously we spent a lot of time. I'm like, yeah, defense is actually a little worse with him out there, but you have to account for the fact that he is guarding the best scorer. So, like, you know, like, there's all that noise kind of stuff. What's crazy is the Okoro Mobley Allen lineup is the lineup that's guarding all the best offensive players. Like, they roll that out a lot of times. That is the starting lineup right now. That is the group that is out there to try to stop these most potent attacks from killing them. So, like, yeah, it's noisy just because no one has defensive ratings that low, but it's not that noisy.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's enough to make you think, hey, this might be good this season. This lineup might work. And I think a lot of credit needs to also go to the other members of that lineup. Like, Darius Garland is playing hard on defense. He's not always doing the right things, but he's playing hard on defense. Lauri Markkanen is playing really hard on defense, and he's making a big effort.
He is winning over the fan base in short order. He's won over Ryan Morton, who is a real grump. He'll never listen to this podcast to know it.
No, but you know what? He, like, that curmudgeon, his heart has grown.
I think our feelings should be more hurt that our friends don't listen to the podcast.
You know what?
Mort doesn't, David doesn't, but hey, they don't have they're not podcast listeners, so
I guess, you know, it's what? Okay. They don't get to hear the nuance. They just get to see our all caps tweets. So really, they're the ones missing out.
But in a lot of ways, this is an all caps podcast right now.
And I think this is also a good opportunity to give an important reminder to all our listeners that if you got friends that just aren't listening to this podcast, tell them to, you know, give that word of mouth. It goes a long way. But I mean, Lauri Markkanen's playing great. He started off the game against Luka Doncic, which I think was a little surprising. It was a mix of Luka and Okoro. I thought both of them did a very good job. But we've seen that before, right? Like, Lauri went out there and he bothered Paul George. He bothered Michael Porter Jr. before he was out for the season and banged up. Like, when you have,
again, so much of it is situational, you know, so much of it is who do you have behind you to protect you, to let you make certain sets of choices.
Right. I'm by no means am I calling him a lockdown defender.
No,
I won't. Maybe plus, like, I think
I think he is a plus based on the situation he's in right now. So, but, like, you know, a lot of players can be plus in that environment.
Right. No,
but he is doing it. And, like, you have to give a guy credit because, as we've noted, this was an empty calories player early in his career.
Yep.
It was, if he wasn't hitting 50% plus on his threes in a game, you probably weren't, at best, you were probably getting neutral value. Last night was the first game all season he shot better than 50% from three in a single game. And he's been consistently helpful. And his absence has been consistently felt when he wasn't there due to COVID. So, you know, I just am really surprised at the kind of player he's been for this team. It's just hard to say anything else.
Yeah. Like, I think some of the things that we highlighted, like, we thought, hey, coming into this season, this is a guy that's benefited, or he's played well as a cutter, but wasn't playing with any passers. I think you've seen that aspect of his game improve. Like, he is kind of more dynamic as a cutter, attacking the basket and whatnot. That's been really good. We said, hey, he's a pretty good movement shooter with some passers. Maybe that's going to be good. that is, like, the shots haven't fallen, but we've seen those actions out there, and we've seen the Cavs' offense get more dynamic as a result of that. But what he's doing, just in terms of effort plays, the way that he's bought in, that has been one of the biggest surprises of the season, which is a nice segue to us listing our three biggest surprises from this season, because we are now a quarter of the way through the year. Carter, would you like to start us off with your one of your three biggest surprises from the start of this season?
I mean, it has to be Evan Mobley being as good as he is for me to start things off.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we were getting someone who would show flashes of elite defensive potential, who would get bullied against the best players in the league, who would, again, would show physical tools, but take a minute on the mental side of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he just came out a complete player and a helpful player right away. That doesn't mean he doesn't have things he can get better at, both on both sides of the ball still. Yep. But like, even
tell Coach Nick that.
Yeah.
Did you see that tweet?
No, I didn't. I saw Jordan Zerm in the comments of the YouTube mentioning it, but I don't know what did Coach Nick say?
He basically said that he felt like the Evan Mobley hype this season for Rookie of the Year is based on box score watching, and he doesn't really have that much impact on the game. He's just a flashy box score kind of guy, Carter. He doesn't do the little things like contesting shots and, you know, the impact plays that really make a difference.
What?
It is.
That is so strange because, like,
I had to break my rule of really not talking about Twitter on the podcast because I don't think it usually adds a whole lot to the conversation. But, like, even by Twitter standards, that is one hell of a take.
That's just galaxy braining, you know, like, because the thing is, I don't actually think his box score really reflects his value most of the time. I mean, he's had a lot of games where he's like 3 of 9 from the field and you're like, oh, Mobley was awesome tonight. So, yeesh.
Yeah.
Just working pretty hard for the Zag there, buddy. You know, I don't know. I think that I just think with Mobley, it's as simple as he is really good right now. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't expect that.
Yeah, which ties into one of my surprises. I wanted to go a little more in depth with surprises because I think there's obvious ones. But for me, it's how well in particular Evan Mobley works with Jared Allen. Like the fact the fact that that pairing works so well early on. Like, I was really adamant that I think Evan Mobley should be a 4. Yeah, he might play as the backup 5, but I think to really reach his potential, I felt a player like Jared Allen could really make this team dynamic. And we already knew coming into this year, hey, Garland and Allen really work well together. On the season, they have a plus 6.4 net rating with Mobley off the floor, 104.3 defensive rating. They're really good. They have great chemistry. And the question was, are you going to be able to do that Garland Allen pick and roll with Mobley kind of, you know, shrinking the floor? There's not the spacing that you would have if you were starting Lauri Markkanen, which was something that people campaigned for. The fact that Mobley and Allen both have the mobility, the versatility, the IQ to work so well together, that is a great sign this early on. And you can see how that pairing can grow. You add Evan Mobley to that mix of Garland and Allen, that plus 6.4 net rating goes up to 8.3 with a defensive rating of 97.9. The reason I'm saying those defensive ratings is you can tell, even though the offensive, or even though the defensive rating jumped down by a lot, the net rating only bumped up a little bit. It's still better when they're all together, but there's still room for this to grow. There is scalable ways for this pairing to work as Evan Mobley continues to expand his offensive game, as the pieces around them get more comfortable, you add shooting around them. But this trio that's really kind of the core foundational pieces for the Cavs, automatically the immediate returns for them is positive. That is a really, really great sign, and it gives the Cavs an identity.
Well, I think that I thought that I was going to have to talk myself into Evan Mobley long-term 4.
Mm-hmm.
And or like always have that kind of sinking suspicion in my gut that, okay, it might work now because Mobley's a little thin. But really, they got to find a way to get him to the 5. And I think you're right in that being a specifically big surprise because I don't think that anymore. I'm not like, I don't see the inevitable breakup coming for this front line.
I think that's a really good way to frame it.
That I think a lot of people thought was going to happen, just and through no fault of Jared Allen's or even Evan Mobley's. It was just like, you know, that's the way the league's supposed to work. If you're a 4-5, you're really a 5. You know, that's kind of the way it's been trending. But he's showing that he's so skilled and has such a capable, you know, and such room for growth on both ends of the ball that it just fits. I think even if he gets stronger, I'm fine rolling with this.
Yeah, and there might be matchups or certain games where, hey, Allen doesn't have it, we're going to roll with Mobley at the four. Or maybe, you know, Allen really has it, Mobley's not having a great night, and you're going with Laurie out there. Like, you have options, but I do think that the potential of those two together is great. And what I really like, and you were talking about league trends, if you maximize the roster around these guys, Mobley and Allen in particular, teams are going to have to change. Like, if Evan Mobley becomes what we think he is, and Jared Allen continues to improve, and Darius Garland continues to improve, teams are going to have to change their roster construction to play the Cavs. Like, you remember how going into those finals against the Warriors, people are like, well, is Kevin Love playable? Are you going to have to take some of your best players off the court to adapt to what this team is doing? You are going to have to make adjustments if this Cavs team is maximized, because they are such a unique pairing. We saw against Dallas, there were times Luka would drive or Powell would drive to the rim, and they would just, like, not even pump fake. They would just kick it out. They're like, nope, I know how this is going to go. I know what this length is. They've recovered too well. Abandon. Like, abandon ships. Let's just bail out of this play. If you maximize that pairing, the Cavs both have an identity, and it's an identity that doesn't have to adapt to whoever you're playing. That's one of the things that I hate about when people talk roster construction. It's okay, well, you have to change what you do to match up against these teams. No, dictate the terms of engagement. You dictate the style that it's going to be played at.
And in fairness to those people, you only get to do that if you're right. You know, you only
right.
If you have a special talent,
you have to have the personnel to do that. Otherwise, yeah, you make the adjustments to try to take away what the opponent's doing. When you're not the better team, remember, that's what you do.
We all remember Isaiah Thomas zagging with a Zach Randolph, Eddie Curry front court in New York. You know, where he was like, "Oh no, you know, the league's getting too small and finesse. I got two bruisers," and it's like, well, you didn't build the right roster around him. They didn't have the requisite talent. Obviously, Eddie Curry wasn't a good enough player.
The Warriors' philosophy doesn't work if you can't go five out with that level of talent, right? Like,
or even this current one, where actually the Warriors are back to playing an uber conventional lineup, in the sense of they've got two complete non-shooters at the 4 and 5. Even worse shooters than the Cavs have, but because they have unique personnel, they can dictate the terms of engagement. The Cavs found their unique personnel. They lucked into a Jared Allen trade when Houston, for some reason, which could be running, a Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, KPJ, Caris LeVert lineup. You know, they lucked, you know, and part of the league is getting luck. It's lucking into Jared Allen.
I salute the Houston Rockets. I cheers my water that not only did you decide we don't want Jared Allen as a return for James Harden, we don't want Evan Mobley either. Thank you, Houston.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness to them, the 27th overall pick in 2024 is pretty meaningful.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like I do think that you're spot on with that surprise, because it's one of the most exciting surprises, because it means they have two rotational or two foundational players, the 4 and the 5, instead of 1.5, and you're going to have to eventually move on from one.
And move on from one in a position of weakness where the whole league knows, oh, Evan Mobley's supposed to be a 5. We can lowball the Cavs for Jared Allen, right? Like,
yep.
That was a fear, and honestly, like, a valid fear if this didn't work, but the early signs are good. What's your next surprise, Carter?
That the vibes are this good. I mean, like, you know, so this Cavs team has had some stretches of success, but there's always been this kind of small discontent burbling, that kind of drama that tends to follow this team around. And if you had told me that before the season that Colin wasn't going to get an extension. And in fact, that, you know, based on reports, that it seemed to be pretty close and it fell apart. That Kevin Love would be getting about 18 minutes a game.
Yeah.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, about 18 minutes a game. That Larry would request a trade out. And the vibes would be immaculate. I would not believed you, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, like we're seeing this team really buy in culturally. I think it's a huge credit to JB. I think it's a huge credit to Kevin Love, who I have just absolutely adored having on the team this season, and have really appreciated his presence whenever he's been out there. It's just really, really surprising. There's a lot of reasons for there to have been some grumbles, you know. I mean, and like even guys like Jared Allen, who I kind of felt disconnected in the second half of the season. It's like, ugh, this sucks. Mm-hmm. Like you could kind of sense that he was dropping off a little bit.
He wasn't the same after that concussion for sure. Whether it was just, hey, we're out of it now, so I'm not like feeling it in the same way. I just got traded from a title contender to another team that's going to the lottery. Like, I think you're completely right. And I think one of your smarter points over the last couple of years that we've been doing this is when you look at a lot of the situations that came up with the Cavs, there was always like a logical explanation of, okay, like I understand how this went, but it's not great that on the whole, these situations keep popping up, that the vibes keep getting derailed in one way or another. Even if every single situation, there's a story behind it, you can figure out exactly why that occurred, but just the energy, the vibes, as you said, they were never kind of in the right place. And the fact that they've shown so much toughness, like the fact that guys have been in and out of the lineup, guys have been banged up, they have faced such a tough schedule. They've had really, really great performances that ended in heartbreaking losses, whether it's the team stalling out, calls not going their way, and they just rebound. They just rebound. We're a quarter of the way through the season. They haven't ever really been completely like just blown out in any way outside of that one game in Phoenix. And even that, they ended up kind of making close later on. Like it really has been an impressive season so far for the Cavs.
Yeah, they just seem to have something of a culture and an identity. They've been talking about accountability for 3 years. Finally feels like they got there. They are a team that gets punched in the mouth and doesn't get knocked down. They stay in every game.
Mm-hmm.
They problem solve. They seem to really ride for each other. There's been very little, you know, pouting on the bench or anything of the sort. You know, it's been really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no other way to say it. It's been awesome. So I just can't believe it. I cannot believe that all of this is kind of coming together, and obviously the vibes are going to be better while the team is winning than while they're losing. But even on the 5-game losing streak, it's like the I don't think that they sagged one bit.
No, they came out sharp. They rebounded and they got two wins. Like that's a great sign. I'm kind of getting a little excited for this Miami game. 10 years without winning in Miami. Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo questionable for that game. So, you know what? The Cavs have lost some games due to injury. I'd like to see one that might have been a little tougher, made easier by injuries. But you know what? There are no easy wins with guys in or out of the lineup, especially a team that's coached as well as Miami. My next surprise, Carter, is how well Garland has adjusted to playing with Ricky Rubio. Because coming into the season, looking at preseason, it was obvious that there was a lot of standing around from Garland when he was playing those minutes with Rubio. We were sitting here saying, well, this is the year that we want Garland to be assertive. This is where we want him to come out and make the leap. Is playing him with Ricky Rubio something that's going to service that? And the fact that he has come out here and the usage rate is still high. It's 24.3 with Rubio on, 26.2 with him off, which, you know, a little bit higher.
Makes
you
sense.
Expect that. But his usage rate with Rubio on is half a percentage lower than it was last season, where he had the ball in his hands almost all the time. And you can tell as the year has progressed, he gets a little more comfortable. He's running off ball screens. He is just way, way more assertive. So obviously he was going to need to step up when Colin Sexton went down with the meniscus tear. But even prior to that, we saw him adjust in real time to playing with someone like Ricky Rubio and learn how to play with someone else that has the ball. And that has been really, really impressive because, it's an example of, especially when you're talking about a young team, if the early returns aren't great, you don't have to go away from it right away. You got to give these guys opportunities to work through it, whether it's Isaac Okoro starting and playing better now that the team's getting healthier and playing more in his role, or someone like Darius Garland struggling early on to play with Ricky Rubio. The answer wasn't to, okay, we need to separate them, stagger them as much as possible so that Garland isn't kind of enabled and playing passive. No, it's, hey, this is going to be something that's really beneficial for you to learn how to play off ball, and we're going to continue with it and hope that you can develop in the ways that we're hoping you to.
Yeah, he has been real. I mean, even from that first, those first couple stints of preseason when we were like, uh-oh, this is not, like, I remember you actually said you were looking forward to seeing him play with Rubio, and I said, I am not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was not interested in that pairing, and it's been the most reliable backcourt pairing that they've had all season.
Yeah,
from a plus minus perspective,
plus 12 net Darius, rating together,
and Darius clearly respects the hell out of him.
Yeah,
you know, you can kind of see it with the urgency in which like Darius will get a board or get an outlet and immediately go find Ricky. And like, oh, Ricky's running the offense right now. You know, you can really catch those kind of little interpersonal interaction where he's like, okay, Ricky is running point right now, so I'm gonna get him the ball and I'm gonna play the two. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean he doesn't ever initiate, that doesn't mean he doesn't try to, you know, run some pick and roll, but he kind of like, that's what a guy with the gravitas of Ricky, and I keep beating my own ex point up on this, because again, I was like, go get like Howell Neto, you know, a good a good veteran point guard that you can probably get for the minimum or something close to it.
An 80% player, Carter. How
an 80% player. And
we strive for greatness in this year podcast. I don't think
Ricky's going out of his way to get the ball to those guys.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, Darius is going out of his way to get the ball to those guys the way he does with Ricky. And I think it's going to pay so many dividends for him down the line, not just with Ricky or other point guards, but even with Colin. You know,
yeah,
I think
that's a great point.
I think when Colin gets back, assuming things kind of get resolved on the contract side of things, when Colin does kind of is running the offense and being an attacker, Darius is going to be so much better suited to move and find weaknesses in the defense to give Colin those outlets and to better space the floor. Like, it's veteran savvy being fast tracked. So I totally love it.
And I also think it'll help out if the Cavs ever go out and, let's say, they use a bunch of draft capital to get a big playmaking wing to play the three and kind of complete that lineup. That is an important, like, learning how to play off ball is really important, whether you're playing off of Colin Sexton or a wing like that. We saw that there was a learning curve for Kyrie learning how to play off of LeBron as a playmaking wing. The fact that that is already being prioritized this early in Garland's career and that development is coming through, really, really good sign. What is your third biggest surprise? I guess not biggest surprise, but surprise you want to highlight, Carter?
We've talked about it a little bit, but I can't get over what a chaos engine Ricky Rubio is. I thought we were getting a caretaker. I thought we were getting a get us into the offense kind of guy, and not a guy who would go bananas against New York and score 39 points or try these insane, like, 4% chance passes. And, you know, what and how important that chaos has been. You know, they need destabilizers on offense. Mm-hmm. They need people who make the defense react and change because they've got so many capable play finishers, whether it's Markkanen shooting the three, Isaac cutting, obviously Mobley and Allen as insane lob threats. So, like, the more chaos you can kind of institute on offense, the better. And while there has been gripes about the amount of shooting he does, and, like, let's be clear, he's never going to be a great finisher. Like, the 2-point percentage is just not going to be there, especially as he's lost a little bit of juice athletically.
And the insane passes that he attempts that result in turnovers every now and then.
Yeah, but, like, he provides that just kind of JU ice that keeps the offense moving, keeps that verve offensively. You know, like there were so many possessions last year where the offense would just kind of run one action and be done.
Mm-hmm.
And Ricky kind of doesn't allow for that to happen. Even if the offense isn't doing anything crazy, his activity and leadership out there pays dividends. I mean, just a plus minus superstar, and not in the way Deli was a plus minus superstar back in the day, you know, where he's like,
where it happened to occur in the time that he was out there.
Yeah. But I mean, I love Deli. I was never like as skeptical as some, I think some people on Cavs Twitter got harder on Deli because they were so annoyed at people misinterpreting plus minus to crap on Kyrie. But I always loved Deli, Deli was the kind of guy who would, he would kind of outperform expectations, but like Ricky raises the rest of the team's energy. And offensively. And that's what I really love about seeing him out there.
Yeah. And Ricky, his presence, his experience, his basketball IQ has helped kind of fuel one of my biggest surprises, which is just how good the offense looks. Like, I know the offensive rating isn't always good, but there's so much more movement. There's so much more structure. Even when guys aren't executing, you can tell what they're trying to do out there. And I'm giving you a twofer here, Carter, for my third biggest surprise, because we didn't mention it, and I think it needs to be mentioned, as I Woody Page with my jersey behind me, with Jetty Osman. Like, he has played so well, and I think he's really benefited from that structure, from a defined role. And Jetty coming out here and being a really important role player, that is a great, great sign, because now all of a sudden, even with Colin Sexton out for the year, you can go 8 deep with guys that I'm confident in, like Garland, Okoro, Laurie, Mobley, Allen, Ricky Rubio, Jetty Osman, and Kevin Love. That is 8 solid guys that I can count on. I know if one guy doesn't have it, you have options you can go to. And beyond that, like Dean Wade, other guys, Lamar Stevens is capable of playing well at times. I would love to see Dylan Windler be more than he has, but he's really kind of gone into his shell. I mean, 11 minutes and one shot attempt, that is not going to get you more playing time. That's probably been one of my disappointments this year. But the fact that with more offensively gifted personnel, which some of that is Garland and Allen improving, some of that's adding Ricky Rubio, some of that's adding Lauri Markkanen,
that's having a normal offseason.
Yeah, like normal offseason, an extended training camp, these guys buying in, coming early to develop that chemistry, to work on shortening that learning curve, because there was always going to be a learning curve. Like,
though, I think Jetty was one of the late arrivals. He was in Turkey.
Jetty just, when everything else is settled, when all that other stuff has been ironed out,
I see what you're saying.
Jetty can just stroll on in. I said I'm giving you a twofer here, Carter. I'm talking about the offense and Jetty.
Because I apologize.
I just like that, you know, the offense looks better. There's more movement. I'm starting to get confidence that as this team adds talent and as there is the internal improvement, you're probably going to see more wrinkles. You're going to see them add stuff. And that was one of the questions that we had coming into this season. And the dividends through one quarter of the year say, hey, there's reason to feel confidence in this coaching staff. There's reason to feel confidence in this front office, given the personnel they've put together and how well this is working. Like, we now know what the thought process is, what the vision for this team is, and when there's missteps along the way, because there will be, trust me on this, there's always going to be missteps, there's always going to be setbacks. We have a setback with Colin Sexton being out for the year. But when those moments occur, when you know what the vision is, you can think of practical solutions. You can think of next steps. You can figure out, okay, this gamble didn't work out, therefore, we need to go to this. And that is just, it's a more easy way for us to kind of digest the team building, for us to do podcasts and figure out what the next steps are. Everything is made easier by that. And I think it's something that should give Cavs fans a lot of confidence.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, with this being put better together. You just have something to autopsy. As you said, yeah. When things go wrong, you have something to evaluate. There were so many games last year where they were so hurt. Not only were they losing, there was nothing to learn. Yeah. And every loss, I think, this season, with the exception of really the two games against Brooklyn and then even Golden State, just because they ran out of gas, like they've had pretty much a full complement that JB and the coaching staff and Kobe Altman can make decisions based off of. I do want to talk a little bit more about Jetty because he's been so damn good. And it's crazy to really, really miss him when he's not there, you know, which he wasn't against Dallas. It's like, oh, man. It's going to be, you know, thank God Laurie went off because, like, Jetty has been so, so very valuable for them. And, you know, what's interesting about Jetty is he has actually, in my opinion, played himself and the Cavs out of a midseason trade. because the reality is, if you were going to go Terrence Ross hunting, Jetty's salary is always going to be the matching.
Yeah, it doesn't really number. Work without him, and I'm probably and not so, giving up Jetty for Terrence Ross. Like,
no, if there's I'm definitely not. And I'm certainly not.
Yeah, if there's another way to make it possible, I mean,
there isn't. I've done some looking. You would have to like trade. Like, you have to do like a 5-for-1. The Cavs just don't have the salaries to get any of these expensive expiring contracts anymore. So, barring a team that's fallen out of contendership by the deadline that just has. You know, a value wing that the Cavs can trade a second round for like the minimum or something near it. Like with Colin getting hurt and Jetty playing the way he is, I think it is more likely than ever that this team does not make a trade than it has in Kobe Altman's entire tenure.
I think there will be a trade just because there always is a trade. But I will admit, when you said today in our group chat that, hey, like a Terrence Ross trade doesn't really work without Jetty, I was like, you know what? No, you're an idiot. I went to the trade machine and I realized it was a whole lot harder than I thought. I'm not going to rule anything out because Kobe has made moves and adjustments and added talent without cap space before. And when you frequently get into trades as a third team, certainly it opens up possibilities.
But well, the thing is,
but the reality is, it would probably be someone that matters because there's just like the money is kind of, it's allocated to the top eight guys that we have confidence in, right? So like
the difference really between this season and the other seasons is Kobe had kind of fake money on the books every year. Yeah. He had guys who
it's a good way to put
had
it.
Been who had been traded for to take on money to help other teams facilitate things. JaVale McGee's, Taurean Prince, you know, like Dante Exum, guys who had big numbers next to their name that didn't factor into the Cavs' future. You look at the Cavs' cap sheet now, and you have Kevin, who, like, I'm not in any hurry to move on from right now, and even if there was a market. Then you have Jarrett, Ricky, Laurie, Jetty, Evan, Darius, Isaac.
Yeah.
Like, those are all players who matter to the Cavs moving forward. They don't have these fake names to throw into a deal to make some money work and buy an extra second or get an extra rotation player. Like, they're going to, if, like, the next trade the Cavs make of note will involve a player that is in the rotation right now that is meant to be in the rotation long term. So
something that just dawned on me.
It's really interesting.
Something that just dawned on me that I had not thought about, and I don't know how this works. But the one thing that might be coming down the pipeline is a disabled player exception. With Colin Sexton being out, you look at recent...
Don't you need a few players out for that?
I don't know.
I think you do.
Do you? Dang. Ugh.
I think it's like 3 or 4. It's like a lot. What? It's basically like, I think the point of that exception is like, hey, guys, we're having a hard time fielding a roster. Can we please have another player?
I was going to say, I'm looking at some of the ones that have been granted, and Clay's was like 9.3. Fultz got Orlando 6.1. Dinwiddie,
maybe I'm
5.7.
Wrong.
Yeah, Dinwiddie 5.7. I feel like the Nets had a lot of bodies out there. I don't know how that works. I'm not a cap expert. That's not my thing. That's not my bag. But hey, if one of those opens up, I'm sure you can't combine it with a player. But you know what? Maybe it's a possibility to add some depth and expand.
Well, actually, I think, so I just pulled up CBA FAQ.
Look at you.
Over
Bill.
At
look at this live research that we're doing.
I believe it's Larry King. So the disabled player exception allows a team which is over the cap to replace a disabled player who will be out for the remainder of the season. This exception is granted by the league based on an application from the team and a termination of an NBA designated physician. I do not see anything about needing multiple players.
There you go. Maybe. I'm sure there's a cap expert out here.
No, I don't see anything there. I think I'm wrong. I think they could apply if they were
out there that wants to inform us. I mean, one of the beauties of this podcast is we are very honest about what we don't know. At ChaseDownPod on Twitter. Let's give us some information, or if you follow us individually, mention us there, or email ChaseDownPod.
I will say this. There is an important bullet here. If the Cavs were to apply for one of these, the team, if it were granted, the team may sign a free agent for one season only for 50% of the player's salary or the amount of the non-taxpayer mid-level, whichever is less.
You know,
I think it would be half of Collins' number, which per trade NBA was 6.3. So it would be a very small number.
You know what? Little something to play with. It's just a possibility. Who knows? We don't know anything. Do you like how I was pawning that off on the listeners rather than like Googling it myself? I'm like, hey, this is going to be fun. You know, let's send us what it is. Tell us.
I was a journalist.
Look at you, Big J journalist. Carter, I'm going to miss you. You won't be on the next podcast because you're too busy. You're too much of a big shot with work. I'm sure I will be able to find a good sub in time. Maybe one that'll replace you for good. You never know.
Listen, it more power to you if you can find someone better.
I'll try to figure something out. I'm sure I will, but I'll be excited to have you back. Hopefully, there'll be more wins to discuss. If not, there's always a lot of to discuss when it comes to the Cleveland Cavaliers. If you guys are watching on YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe. Click that notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.